परम स्वभाव श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि श्री गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। सामवेद भक्तवृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gaurava. Should we make arrangements for a translation?
I think nobody needs for this. Is there a English
for this? Listen now,
Francis. You can't hear the English.
That's right, come close. Upanishad means to sit close by. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So this evening we're reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is. We're continuing from yesterday, so we're in chapter 18, text 22. The 18th chapter is called Perfection of Renunciation. And the last text had been talking about different kinds of knowledge, the modes of goodness and the modes of passion, and this evening, knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Sort of like, sounds like a contradiction, doesn't it? But it's there. So the text is up there, so we can chant this. Text. So text 22.
Yat
tu
Krishna
vad
ekasmin
karye
saktam
aitukam
tatvartha
vad
alpam
cha
tat
tamasam
udaritam
yattu krishna vaddegasmin arye saktam haitukam tatvarta tadalpam
cha
Tamasamudaritam Yattu Krishna Vare Kasmin
Yattu Krishna Vare Kasmin
Arye Saktam Mahaitukam
Arye Saktam Mahaitukam
Tatvarta Vadalpam
Cha Tatvarta Vadalpam
Cha Tathamasamudaritam
Tathamasamudaritam
Tu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Tu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Arye Saktam Mahaitukam
Arye Saktam Mahaitukam
Tatvarta Vadalpam
Cha Tatvarta Vadalpam
Cha Tathamasamudaritam
Tathamasamudaritam
Yattu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Yattu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Karye Saktam Mahaitukam
Karye Saktam Mahaitukam
Tatvarta Vad Alpam
Cha Tatvarta Vad Alpam
Cha Tathamasam Udaritam
Tathamasam Udaritam
Yattu Krishna Vat Ikasmin
Yattu Krishna Vat Ikasmin
Karye Saktam Mahaitukam
Karye Saktam Mahaitukam
Tatvartha Vat Alpam
Cha Tatvartha Vat Alpam
Cha Tathamasam Udharitam
Tathamasam Udharitam
Yattu Krishna Vat Ikasmin
Yattu Krishna Vat Ikasmin
Karye Saktam Mahaitukam
Yattu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Yattu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Kaye Sattam Ahaitukam
Kaye Sattam Ahaitukam
Atatvartavat
Alpamcha Atatvartavat
Alpamcha Tattamasam Udaritam
Tattamasam Udaritam
Yattu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Yattu Krishna Vade Kasmin
Kaye Sattam Ahaitukam
Kaye Sattam Ahaitukam
Atatvartavat Alpamcha
Atatvartavat Alpamcha
Tattamasam Udaritam
Tattamasam Udaritam
Yet
Yet
That which
That which
To
But
Krishna Vat,
Krishna Vat,
as all in all,
as all in all,
Ekasmin,
Ekasmin,
in one,
in one,
Karye,
Karye,
work,
work,
Saktam,
Saktam,
attached,
attached,
Ahetukam,
Ahetukam,
without cause,
without cause,
Atatva,
Atatva,
Artavat,
Artavat,
without knowledge of reality.
Without knowledge of reality.
Alpam.
Alpam.
Very meager.
Very meager.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
That.
Tamasam.
Tamasam.
In the mode of darkness.
In the mode of darkness.
Udaritam.
Udaritam.
Is said to be.
Is said to be.
Translation. And that knowledge by which one is attached to one kind of work as the all-in-all, without knowledge of the truth, and which is very meager, is said to be in the mode of darkness. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The knowledge, here the word knowledge is in quotation marks, meaning so-called knowledge, the knowledge of the common man is always in the mode of darkness or ignorance, because every living entity in conditional life is born into the mode of ignorance. One who does not develop knowledge through the authorities or scriptural injunctions has knowledge that is limited to the body. He is not concerned about acting in terms of the directions of Scripture. For him, God is money. We could say money is God. And knowledge means the satisfaction of bodily demands. Such knowledge has no connection with the absolute truth. It is more or less like the knowledge of the ordinary animals, the knowledge of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. Such knowledge is described here as the product of the mode of darkness. In other words, knowledge concerning the spirit soul beyond this body is called knowledge in the mode of goodness. Knowledge producing many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and mental speculation is the product of the mode of passion. And knowledge concerned only with keeping the body comfortable is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharani Visheshasya Om Mangyanam Timurandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chaksuru Vritam Jena Tasma Shri Varve Namaha Vanshakalpatu Vyasya Visindu Vyasya 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 Vyas First of all, let me say I'm very happy to be back here. It's a relief coming to Germany from America right now. And nice to have the association of all the devotees here. So first let me say, here we are seeing the analysis of knowledge in terms of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance. And the last three verses, the last two verses have, these three verses together, they deal with this, goodness, passion, ignorance. And Prabhupada has summed it up very nicely here at the end of the whole discussion. A knowledge concerning the spirit soul beyond this body is called knowledge in the mode of goodness. Knowledge producing many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and mental speculation is the product of the mode of passion. And knowledge concerned only with keeping the body comfortable is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So this analysis in terms of three modes of material nature is a very important part of the Bhagavad Gita. Earlier, chapter number 14, the whole chapter is explaining these three modes of material nature. And then in great detail, it's various things in the 17th chapter are explained in the three modes of material nature. Austerity, charity, penance, food, the divisions of the faith, is called. And then we see this final chapter, a great deal of it is also concerned with looking at things in terms of the three modes of material nature. Now those of us who get our traditional knowledge from the Western sources, there's no such idea of the three modes of nature. It's just not part of anything that people are taught. Before I became a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, I was studying Bhagavad Gita in a university. I was in a graduate school, a PhD program in religious studies. And so maybe three different courses, three or four different times, I read the Bhagavad Gita. And this part, I had no idea what it meant. Even the word, Prabhupada uses the word mode for guna. Sanskrit word is guna. And the literal meaning of guna is either, it is like a rope, or sometimes part of a rope. Sometimes you make a rope by taking three smaller strands and weaving them together. So sometimes it is, they're called guna because they tie you up like a rope to material nature. Or sometimes because material nature, it's described in the 14th chapter, it is these three modes are wound together, and sometimes one is on the top, and then another is on the top, and then another is on the top. So when I would read English translations of the Bhagavad Gita, they would talk about the three strands. And I had no idea what that meant. So Prabhupada uses the word mode. And mode means a way of acting. So sometimes nature is acting this way, sometimes nature is acting that way, sometimes nature is acting yet another way. So actually it didn't become clear to me what the Bhagavad Gita was talking about until I read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, in my university, all my teachers that were teaching Hinduism courses, they were all actually Hindus. Not only Hindus, they were Bengalis. But still, they never could make it clear what this meant. An interesting experience. But it's very important to know this and to understand it. So, if we look at our own experience of material nature, I think everyone can see how in the material world, material nature acts in three ways. Sometimes things are being created. Then sometimes they're being maintained. And then sometimes they're being destroyed. In fact, this forms a cycle. Things are created, they come into being. Then they last for a while. Then gradually they fall apart or deteriorate or destroyed. And then when they're destroyed, everything is recycled. And the products of destruction are reassembled for another creation. This happens in the cycle of the seasons. In springtime, the trees have sex. Leaves come out. Produce their blossoms, and then in the autumn the leaves turn red and yellow and brown, and they fall to the ground, and they go back into the soil, and so on. This is the cycle of nature. But we can all see that this nature is working in this way. But in the understanding from the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas, these three ways of working, the three modes, are very fundamental characteristics. It's an important basic distinction for understanding how everything works. And especially what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching is that our human psychology is also affected by the modes of nature. It's not just out there, but it's in here. So in the 14th chapter, Prabhupada summarizes, it's described very detailed, what is the mode of goodness, what it is like, what are its characteristics, and what is the mode of passion, and what is the mode of ignorance. So if you study these chapters, you start to see it. Suddenly you can see, oh, this person is in the mode of goodness, this person is in the mode of passion, this person is in the mode of ignorance. So as Prabhupada said, there are three types of human beings. One is happy. This is to say, this is the mode of goodness. One is active. This is the mode of passion. And one is helpless. This is the mode of ignorance. Happy, active, and helpless. One reason it is difficult for us in the modern times to see the modes of nature is our own modern civilization that we were born and raised in is really a kind of overdevelopment of the mode of passion. Human beings anyway are situated in the mode of passion. It is said that the devatas, the demigods, are in the mode of goodness, human beings are in the mode of passion, and animals are within the mode of ignorance. But then there's a further subdivision. Then you take human beings who are basically in the mode of passion, but then again you can have human beings in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Just like among the animals, they're also divided that way. The cow is in the mode of goodness. The lion is in the mode of passion. And the monkey is in the mode of ignorance. I think that's is the way it's understood. So, and then you could probably take, well, there's monkeys in the mode of goodness, monkeys in the mode of passion, and monkeys in the mode. You can always divide and subdivide and subdivide again. But especially, Prabhupada has remarked that in the present day, the standard of advancement is the standard of the mode of passion. The mode of passion is born out of unlimited desires and longings. As we said, the mode of passion is associated with creation. So that means a great deal, whenever there's sexual desire, then that means the mode of passion has become heavy. And when that becomes the standard of advancement. This is the mode of passion. Yesterday, one bhakta in our temple, he started working at a restaurant we have downtown. And in our restaurant, there are devotees working there, and there are also some people that aren't devotees working there. And he's a young boy, good-looking young boy. And so he was working behind the counter, and this girl comes in, and she starts looking at him, as we say, making eyes at him. And finally, she comes up to him and says, propositions him that come and have sex with him. Not just me, but my girlfriend, who all three. So this boy, just he was pretty disturbed by this, and he told him he wasn't interested, and he had to talk to her for some time to tell her why he wasn't going to do this. She wouldn't take no for an answer, as they say. So anyway, finally he went away. But this other person who worked at the restaurant, who was not a devotee, a guy by the name of Larry, he said to the devotee, he said, "I can't believe you turned her down." "What?" He said, "That was the American dream." How can you reject it? He called it the American dream. In America, the politicians are always talking about the American dream, which is usually, it's also always in the mode of passion. American dream really means that you have a chance to become rich somehow or other. That even though you're born poor, in the course of time, you will become rich and so on like that. It's the American dream. So he said, "This is the American dream." So this is the standard of the mode of passion. But Prabhupada remarks that in earlier times, the standard of advancement was the standard of the mode of goodness. So we have to understand these differences, because the importance for us is that if one wants to become successful in Krishna consciousness and spiritual life, we have to become elevated to the mode of goodness. So that's why it's important to study these symptoms, because we can look into ourselves and say, oh, because these three modes, here we can identify the modes in ourselves, because the three modes are always together. They're not separated. But one will become prominent, more powerful, and the others will become weak. And so the predominant or controlling mode of our existence should become the mode of goodness, even though we may be, because of birth and training, situated in the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. Still, by discipline, it is possible to change it. I'll find there's some places where Prabhupada has talked about this. I've found one out. Here's a place. This is the end of the chapter called The Divine and Demoniac Natures. Prabhupada says, this material energy is constituted of the three modes of material nature. One has to raise himself at least to the mode of goodness before the path to understanding the Supreme Lord can be opened. Without raising oneself to the standard of the mode of goodness, one remains in ignorance and passion, which are the cause of demoniac life, and so on. So we may wonder why it is that in earlier times, in Europe also, Middle Ages and even a little later, people didn't have any, everyone believed in God. They didn't have any trouble understanding the idea of God. Today, if you talk about God, people, what is that? That's a world, God is a word left over from olden times. Or the other word is soul. Prabhupada is always talking about his spirit soul. And where is the soul? Here I am. You know, there's my body, there's me, there's no, I don't see any soul. You look around the world, there's no God. So, the point is that these ideas only become clear to us when we are in the mode of goodness. When we are being controlled by the modes of passion and ignorance, we cannot understand them. So, nowadays, if you will, you go to any university, go to a philosophy department, where you may think you will try to understand some of these kinds of spiritual or metaphysical things. No one tells the students, first of all, you have to come to the mode of goodness to understand them. It always sounds strange to us when we read in Srila Prabhupada's purports, when he talks about student life. And for Prabhupada, the word student and the word brahmachari, celibate, they're the same word. Because that was always the case, not just in India, also in Europe. A student and celibate. Now you try it. People will think you're crazy. So because we are conditioned by the modes of passion, that is to say, people are simply interested in there are longings and desires to satisfy the senses. And whatever knowledge I have ultimately is directed toward satisfying the senses. And I become very active to do it. The mode of passion is characterized by activity. Like an autobahn is a manifestation of the mode of passion. Big cities where there's always everyone's working very hard and going fast, faster and fastest. This is the mode of passion. Great activity to acquire objects for the satisfaction of the senses. And our whole, when people get together, the leaders of the nations of the world get together, the main topic is economic development. When there are elections, it's in your country the same as in my country. If the economy is bad, you don't get elected, or you have a very hard time. Because the job of the politician is to deliver economic development to the citizens. Why? Because that way they'll become happy and satisfied. But this is the delusion. Happiness is not the character, is not the result of the mode of passion. Who remembers what is the result of the mode of passion?
Huh?
You know, that's what it's characterized by. But what does it end up in?
Suffering.
Suffering, yeah, misery. Yeah, misery. And why is the result of the mode of passion misery? Because when you satisfy material desires, the desires do not go away. They become stronger. And so therefore I'm always restless. No, you know who the archetypical person in the mode of passion is, Faust. He's waiting, when will that time come when I will say, now I'm satisfied? Always going on wanting more and more and more, more knowledge, more this, more experience. But then actually the mode of passion is that you're never satisfied, because the desires just increase. You work so hard, and in the course of working so hard, you do not enjoy yourself. It is hard work. And then when you get what you've been working so hard for, it's not satisfying me. It's not enough. It's not enough. I've worked so hard. I've become so rich. I have so much money, billions and billions of dollars or euros. Now I'm not satisfied. It must mean that I must be more billions and more. So you just keep going. Because you're in the mode of passion, you don't think, oh, maybe this is... And finally, if you're still disappointed, then you don't know where to turn. What will I do? I've got everything I ever wanted. I'm successful. I've achieved everything I can achieve. Still, I'm not happy. So most people, what they do to kill the pain is they start doing things like, well, usually it's intoxicant. In other words, they go down to the mode of ignorance. Why am I suffering? They cannot answer that question, and so they simply try to take painkillers of some kind or another. And of course, suicide is always an option. Intoxicants, gambling, anything to lower your awareness of your own suffering. And then people become bitter and disappointed in their lives. So this is the result of the mode of passion, is misery. So we should think about the future of this materialistic civilization. If it's an overdevelopment of the mode of passion, ultimately it means what will happen is people will become more and more and more miserable. What will happen then? That's why they need instruction. Why are you suffering? Because one can go from the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, one becomes detached from the fruit of the work. I'm not lazy. Laziness is the mode of ignorance. I don't do anything. When I was in college, these people, sometimes would have people in the mode of ignorance. You'd go into their apartments, their so-called students, and they would simply be dirty dishes piled in the sink because nobody would wash them. Dirty clothes all over the room. Person staying in bed all day, watching the television, taking drugs. Too lazy to even turn the channel. This is a mode of ignorance, taking drugs, intoxicating, thinking everything is helpless, doesn't matter what I do, and so on. So this is depression. You can actually see that they say that at least in America, so many people are taking antidepressant drugs. Psychiatrists are prescribing them. Teenagers especially are taking so many antidepressant drugs because they're depressed. The reason they're depressed is because, in fact, everything is depressing. They're saying it's a mental illness, but as far as I can see, it's sane. If everything is depressing, then you should be depressed. If everything is terrible and you're happy, something's wrong with you. So, but because they do not know how to change things, so people have some future, some hope. But the whole material world is discouraging, because what happens ultimately with the mode of passion is you work hard, you do so much, you try for the American dream or whatever it may be, and then you grow old. And you become diseased, and you die. And what happened to everything? That's depressing. And so the only way you can be enthusiastic in the mode of passion is by also having a big dose of the mode of ignorance. You make yourself stupid. I don't see my inevitable destruction. Even though we know it, we pretend it's not there. So this out there, this everyone's life in the material world is based on an illusion. In the mode of goodness, one can understand spiritual life. In the mode of goodness, when we become detached from the fruits of our work, when our consciousness becomes very alert, but at the same time not attached, then we can start to understand. So these things, the motive, what happens because of the mode of passion and ignorance, is we become controlled by lust and greed and anger. And so if we understand that lust and greed and anger are our enemies, that's a great breakthrough right there. People don't think that lust is their enemy. Here when men are now 60 years old, they should think, wow, it's going away, great, I'm free. No, now there's no more lust, let me take Viagra or some pill. So they keep the lust. They want more lust. So lust and greed and anger become people's whole reason for living. But actually, if we understand that these are our enemies, they're only causing suffering, and that I do not have to be controlled by them, then there's the possibility of becoming elevated to goodness. So Prabhupada says that's why, that's the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. You should think of these modes of nature, passion and ignorance. They're kind of, they're toxic. They're poisonous to the spirit soul. So we have to take an anti-toxic medicine. And so, fortunately, because of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, here's the antidote for this poison. How to clean up the toxic mental environment. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
That will do the job. It's like medicine. It's a subtle sound vibration that it goes into the subtle body, and it destroys the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. Just as if you have an infection, you take an antibiotic, it destroys the bacteria that's causing your disease. So this destroys this lower modes, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You have to take it according to the directions. One thing, just like as Prabhupada explained this, you have to take the medicine from the doctor according to the directions on the bottle, otherwise it will not be so effective. So we have some process that's given, how to chant the holy name in such a way that its potency will be effective. So in this way, the modes of passion and ignorance go away. And it works, at least for myself, when I first saw the devotees. I was in my third year of PhD work, and I saw some devotees chanting on my college campus. This was in 1969. The city I was in, Philadelphia, where I still am, that's 2 hours drive south of New York City. New York City is where Prabhupada started. The first temple in America was in New York City. So some devotees came down to Philadelphia. At that time it was the fourth largest city in America. Now it's gone down a little further, but it's a big city. They were starting a temple. And so they came to the university campus and they were chanting. I was a student of religion, and so I became interested. And when I was a child at that church, we used to collect money to send missionaries from America to India. Now the missionaries are coming the other way. I thought that was interesting. And then a friend invited me to this Sunday feast. So I went to this little rented house where the devotees who were just starting were having a Sunday feast. And I was coming like an anthropologist. I was just going to look at it. I was going to stay detached. And when I saw devotees chanting and Hare Nam, my very first idea was, I'll never do something like that. Krishna always surprises you. So I had been studying Hinduism, as I mentioned, in college, in graduate school. But everything I had studied was Mayavad philosophy. In those days, every time anybody taught Hinduism, they taught Advaita Vedanta, at least what they thought was Advaita Vedanta. That was Hinduism. So I heard something about Vaishnavism, but not very much. They didn't think it was important. So when I went to this first Sunday feast, the devotee gave a lecture. And in the lecture, he talked about the necessity to become free from material desires. And I thought, oh, he's telling the truth. Because when I was studying religion, I thought, well, what is the thing that all the religions teach at their highest level, that they have in common? And I thought it was summed up very nicely by Buddha, when he said that life is suffering, meaning material existence in this world, its nature is suffering. And I had no problem understanding that. Now, some people never understand it, but at least for me it was clear. He says the cause of the suffering are our desires, our attachments, because it's an incompatible situation. Everything is temporary, and we get attached to temporary things, we're going to suffer. As simple as that. So he said the cause of suffering is our desires. I can understand that. And then he said one has to become free from desires. You have to wipe out these desires, destroy them. Okay, I believe that must be true. And also if you look at the great Christian saints and everybody, they say this, Hindu, Buddhism, Christians, Taoistic, everybody who knows anything, they all say this. But when I tried to do anything along those lines of becoming free from material desire, I had no effect. I couldn't do it. I was being controlled. It was not possible. Also, this was 1969, marijuana, LSD, all these things, all my friends were taking them. So it looked pretty helpless, a hopeless case for me. So first when the devotee said that one has to become free from desire, he said it too. I thought, oh, that's good. He talked about the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness. In those days, the devotees were very aggressive. the people around me, mostly students and hippie types, they were not happy by this lecture. Oh, this is sex, no intoxication. But I thought, oh, he's telling the truth. And then he said something I've never heard before. He said that you cannot control your senses or withdraw your senses from material things unless you give your senses spiritual engagement. That was a new idea to me. Because everything I learned was all from the Mayavadi point of view. There's no conception of spiritual engagement of the senses. It's all about just cutting everything out somehow or other. So this was, so I became really interested, especially if you're a graduate student, you love to hear a new idea. So it was interesting to me. And then he suggested that we should, this control of the senses begins with the tongue, and we should chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And also we should eat Krishna Prasad. I was already a vegetarian. Pretty much. I don't know why my wife and I just decided, yeah, it was cleaner and neater. No particular reason. But of course, I didn't have prasad until after the lecture for the first time, which was really, really amazing thing to taste at that time. So anyway, I got a set of japa beads, and somebody taught me how to chant the mantra on the beads. And I thought I would try it and see what happened. Now, I had no particular, I thought the devotees were very strange people. They were not very educated from my point of view. I was a snob. They stood on the street corners and jumped up and down and chanted, and I thought that was low class thing to do. But still I decided I would try it and see what happened. So I got some beads, and I think I was serious about this idea. I really did want to become free from material desires. And I started to chant, let's see what would happen, and my material desires began to go away. As I said, you can't say it because it worked, because I believed it, because I only began to believe it because it worked. And I realized that whatever I'm doing is very, very potent. And actually, I have to confess that after a while, I quit chanting because I became frightened. Because I didn't know who these people were, I didn't know what I was getting into, I didn't know anything about it. That was one thing. The second thing was, when the desires actually began to go away, I didn't know what to do with myself. Suddenly everything all my friends were doing, I didn't want to do anymore, but what was I going to just chant? Is there anything else to do? I didn't know what to do with myself. And it wasn't when the actual, it looked like the desires would go away. I wasn't quite sure I wanted that to happen so soon. So there's still some attachment there to these kind of things. So I quit. I was frightened. About it, because everything was changing so fast. I didn't know who the devotees were. But then when I quit, I just felt terrible. They all came flooding back in. I felt like I was covered in dirt and grease. And so very cautiously, I began chanting again. Went back to the devotees. And then I got some books. There were not many books in those days, but I got it had just been published was Prabhupada's translation of the Isha Upanishad, which I had studied already, and which nobody knew what it meant. Even the translator said, these are very obscure sentences. The professors didn't know what it meant. It was like the three strands, you know. People were just, it was something wonderful and mystical, but nobody knew what it meant. But I read Prabhupada's, when I read Prabhupada's translation and purports in the Isha Upanishad, that was it. It was so wonderful. It was clear to me that he understood the Isha Upanishad. And second of all, I could see how sophisticated, how expert the philosophy was. It was first class. Actually, after I read that, I thought everything else I'd studied looked like it was done by amateurs, and this was professional. So that's what happened. But my first experience was that when I started chanting, it started to get rid of the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance. And when I was first chanting, first of all, I think I was trying very hard to concentrate. And second of all, I didn't have the chance to commit so many offenses yet. Like Vaishnava Aparad and Guru Avaishna, I didn't associate with the devotees, so I couldn't offend them. And I couldn't disobey the order of the spiritual master because I didn't know what a spiritual master was. So, after you had to become a little careful about those things. But in the very beginning, there must have been what's called some namabasa. So it was very close like that to work this way. So I know that this chanting works. We've been given this medicine by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we cannot say that because the modes are very, we know how strong the modes of passion and ignorance are. We cannot say anyway, that it's not possible to be done. Simply, we have to have some strong desire. Because whatever happened, because of the results of the other modes are not good. The mode of happiness is goodness is characterized by knowledge, and it leads to happiness. And because the happiness, because one is on the spiritual beginning of the spiritual platform, and not attached, and can see things as they are, hear things as they are, taste things as they are. So that therefore one actually becomes happy, peaceful, interested in life. But the result of the mode of passion is misery, and the result of the mode of ignorance is insanity. So those two modes do not take us to good places. We should become elevated to the mode of goodness, and then that's the platform which we can actually transcend the modes altogether to the spiritual state, which is called purified goodness. Here in the material world, the goodness, there's always some little bit of ignorance and passion in there, but when you become fully purified, then one is actually beyond the mode of nature. Sadhguna ansami ticha tan brahmo vidu. This is stated, mamchayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sadhguna ansami ticha tan brahmo guyaya kapate. One who practices devotional service steadily, that person goes beyond the three modes and attains the platform of Brahman. This Krishna statement like this is there. So it works. So we should learn these three modes. We should study these chapters in the Bhagavad Gita very carefully, understand how they work in all different aspects. We have to become like physicians. We are physicians who are to treat the material disease, the disease of material existence. So just like a physician has to understand disease, so we have to understand the three modes of material nature and how they work, how they act to bind the soul, and how also one can become released. So that first of all, we can be treated. There's a saying, you know, physician, heal yourself. So the physician has to first, we have to heal ourselves, and then we have to heal other people. Otherwise, there's no bright future for any of us unless we come to the mode of goodness and then use that platform. When we're in the mode of goodness, when we become in the mode of goodness, more and more Bhagavad Gita will make sense. Everything that Prabhupada said, we will understand how it is there, how it is true. Prabhupada described what he's teaching as a science of self-realization. Science means that we experience it for ourselves. It's not just some theoretical knowledge off in the distance somewhere, but it becomes something we actually live. So the science means it's applied knowledge, and that applied knowledge actually gives us the ability for having direct spiritual perception of the soul, of God, and seeing everything as it really is in relationship to God. Yeah, I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
You give the example from middle age where the people have been by nature more in more believing more in God, or it was natural for them. And actually, that's a sign there must be more in goodness. When we see in our history books and learn about the Middle Age, it looks that they are in ignorance because they have no hygiene and they live very cross. And in the Middle Age, they behave, at least in the European region, they behave very, they kill each other and things like that.
Yeah, that never happened in recent times, right?
Maybe it's the school contamination, some or other in the mind. One has the idea that in these ages people have more ignorance.
Yeah, well, because there's a lot of propaganda. There's actually a lot of propaganda. Because we always thought the Middle Ages, you know, they're called also the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
But that's an historian term, meaning there's not so much information. but because there was a big change in the West, there was a Renaissance, and then there was the Enlightenment of Clairon, you know? And from this Enlightenment, they say, okay, everything in the past up until now, it's all superstition, it's all nonsense. Let's take our whole past and throw it away and start over again, and we'll make progress. We'll be scientists. We'll take no more superstition, no more traditional knowledge. Everything will be done by reason and logic and by science. And this is what we call the Enlightenment Project. And then, you know, after that, there's the Industrial Revolution. Look at this, we're controlling material nature. So that belief in progress was pretty strong until what happened in 1914 to 1917. Where there was a huge European civil war, and all the things for progress just killed people for no good reason. Actually, no good reason. And now we had industrialized warfare, not just the gun, but the machine gun. This progress. But anyway, people still believe there was some disillusionment. But I mean, when I was a child, when the first television sets were becoming available in the 1950s, the big programs were sponsored by this General Electric, and they always had this slogan: "Remember, progress is our most important product." So people think they're progressing. They think that humanity has never been so advanced as it is now. So anyway, in the European Middle Ages, it's true that people were. Anyway, it wasn't Vedic culture exactly. But nevertheless, the goal of the culture, the generally acknowledged cultural goal, was spiritual life. The best thing you could do was become a monk, or become renounced. Yeah. Where today we build big skyscrapers for commerce, then they built, you know, like, Köln Dome, Notre Dame. It's different culture. That at least was their idea. That was their idea. But I don't think there was as much scientific knowledge of what you need to do for spiritual advancement as we have. They would sometimes accidentally discover things, like the monks who made a lot of spiritual advancement were vegetarians, not because that they had any philosophical understanding about this, but because only really rich people got to eat much meat anyway. And they were supposed to be austere, so as a matter of being austere, they became vegetarians, for example. So this became, some monks actually, so that was a usual thing that meat eating was. Now, of course, we're more advanced than the ladies. We have organized slaughterhouses and McDonald's. We're worse off from a spiritual point of view than they were, even whatever. And so, and the water was not reliable, so everybody had to drink beer. Although, again, the water is not so reliable. Anyway, I don't know if there's any progress. We are the victim of some propaganda. That we have never been better off today, better off as we are today. Yeah.
Is there a guarantee with the mode of goodness? Because we have, Srila Prabhupada somewhere writes about conditions of the mode of goodness. There are many people in the mode of goodness who are very hard cases for the Hare Krishna movement.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, they tend in other directions. Sure. Can you say something about this?
Yeah, the mode of goodness itself, for a devotee to come in the mode of goodness as part of a program of spiritual development, you'll use it to transcend the modes. Persons who come to the mode of goodness either naturally or by some development but don't understand anything higher, then they'll become attached. They'll become attached to knowledge. They'll think the material, because they're not suffering so much, they'll think the material world is a nice place. So they become complacent, you know. Okay, I'll just sit here and not worry any much. So it has its dangers also. It's also a mode of material nature. But if we see the material mode of goodness as just a kind of launching pad for going beyond the modes, then it will not have any dangers for us. That's my understanding. Okay, you had a question?
Once I heard, in order to preserve one's spiritual progress, one has to preserve one's sukriti. That is a Sanskrit term. I didn't understand that. Maybe you can explain.
Somebody said in order to preserve your spiritual progress, you had to preserve your sukriti.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what it means. I'm still not sure I understand the statement.
I heard it from a Vaishnava as a recommendation, but
yeah.
Somehow it didn't come so clearly.
Well, sukriti, kriti means a deed, something you do. Kriti. So there's sukriti, good deeds, and there's duskriti, bad deeds. So sukriti sometimes means your pious credit. That's also, sukriti can lead to the mode of goodness. Or be part of the mode of goodness. So I think what is the meaning of preserve your sukriti is don't perform sinful activities. It's simple. Duskriti. Su means good. Du means bad in Sanskrit. So su and du. So good deeds and bad deeds. I think it's just a way of saying that one should avoid sinful activities or performing bad deeds because they will. Generally, pious activities or punya karma, again, by themselves, they will bind you to the material world. But if part of the process of spiritual development, they're helpful. Okay? Yeah? Oh, nothing.
There's a room conversation on the table where Prabhupada says that you cannot make a Shudra artificially a Brahmana, and he has to, we can act in his position, and because he does it for Krishna, he automatically will come also to the mode of goodness. But Shudra or Kshatriya, they are all conditioned by the activities. So, how I can understand, for example, if If I do a Shudra work, I'm a Vaishnava, but I think it will condition the work.
Yeah, let me see if I had the question right. As I understand, the question is that according to the modes of material nature, we do a certain amount of work. So I'm somehow born in such a way, I'm a worker. You know, I stack bricks on top of one another. I'm a carpenter, I work with my hands, I do manual labor. That's shudra work. A brahmana is a person who does intellectual work, works with his brain. He's got a good brain for that. So when a shudra, so let's say a shudra becomes a Vaishnava, and as a result of that becoming a Vaishnava, the modes of ignorance and passion go away. Can he suddenly do the work of a brahmana? We see that no. It will not be able to do the work of a brahmana. But nevertheless, that person has all the good qualities of a brahmana. No longer has the qualities of a shudra. He's peaceful, self-controlled. And although he may not be able to do some brahmana activities like study the Vedas, but maybe he's illiterate. Still, because of his being a Vaishnava, Krishna in the heart gives him all spiritual knowledge. So that's my understanding of how you can come. So that person can still do the shudra work, they still be a carpenter, or still be a bricklayer, not attached to the fruits of the work, and that person becomes liberated. And by somehow hearing from devotees and understanding Krishna consciousness, just by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, they actually... in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this is explained very carefully. Even if one is not very bright, the Dani Bhuri Yogantam, I give them the understanding from inside their hearts. I come into their hearts and with a shining lamp of knowledge, I destroy the darkness born of ignorance. So that may mean you cannot do the, you may not be able to do the work of a brahmana or a kshatriya or so on. That's all right. That's already there. It's built into the body and the brain and so on. But that's okay. It will not hurt you. Okay, is that clear?
Yeah. So in previous time, shudra work was quite natural, and now we see we have factories. And also maybe Shudra was singing nice melody or some soft melody. Now we have heavy metal and things.
Yeah.
So what is now in this modern devotees, we practice all of this Ugra
karma. Kind. Yeah, horrible.
How does it affect us? Maybe it's because it's also a good tool sometimes.
Yeah, it's bad for you, sure. Sure, the shudras now, instead of working with their hands in a peaceful environment, and that. So modern industrial civilization is not good for spiritual advancement. That's Prabhupada's, it is actually not conducive. He says, factory is another name for hell. I spent one summer working in a factory. Or they're manufacturing cans. They canned food and it was hell. There's no doubt about it. Although I made good money because it was a good labor union, it was still terrible. You could not develop any good qualities. That's true. So therefore, Prabhupada liked very much this program by Mahatma Gandhi, Village Cottage Industry. Hand loom, instead of having a factory, you know, with the mechanical looms, you have the hand looms and so on like that. Ultimately, the material basis for a spiritual civilization will have to be agrarian. That is to say, based on not an industrial civilization. In this way, there may be something like going back to the Middle Ages, but I don't think we'll won't. There'll still be technology. But people will have to become, the family should be the unit of production, like it used to be, not just consumption. Because this family is no more. It's not good for human beings. It's why everybody's depressed. Another reason why everybody's depressed. There's no more family. No more security like that. So the family becomes a unit of production. And that whatever we eat and our production of food and energy, that will be local, not imported from halfway around the world. It's like that. So this is Prabhupada's program. That's why he wanted these self-sufficient communities. If you actually engage in cow protection, that forces you to become an agrarian economy. If you use oxen for plowing, when you have cows and you protect them and you want to keep making milk, then there must be calves, baby cows. There are two kinds, males and female. So if you don't make economic use of the males, it won't work. So they have to plow. So plow means you also have to have people walking behind them. You can't have a tractor anymore. Then everybody has to move back to the farms. And so actually it would actually be very natural if you just have cow protection. And for it to work, then you have to have forces you to have a pre-industrial economy, or we can say post-industrial economy, maybe. It's very advanced, plowing with oxen, because nowadays when you use a tractor, you have to, in my country, there's tractors, of course. The tractors, they run on petrol. That petrol comes from someplace like Saudi Arabia. So it's no big bargain, because in order to have that tractor, you have to have oil refineries, you have to have big tankers, you have to invade Iraq. And have the big armies and big defense budget. And when you figure out what thing costs, it's no bargain at all. It doesn't save anything. But if you're plowing with an oxen, first of all, it produces its own food is right there, so you don't have to bring in the fuel supply from somewhere else. And another thing, the fertilizer, it also produces fertilizer. You don't have to get that by the most fertilizer is also a petroleum product, an oil product. So to me, it looks like a much better solution. So people will maybe one day have to do it. The only place I think that plowing with oxen in the world right now is advancing is Cuba. Because Cuba, because the United States is blockading, keeping them isolated economically. And as soon as everybody, from all reports, people are very healthy, they've got enough to eat, there's no problems. And as soon as it ends, as soon as Castro's dead and they go back to the modern economy, you watch, it'll be all over. Yeah. last question.
Is spiritual advancement or becoming a Vaishnava dependent that the soul is elevating through this modes, through the three material modes onto goodness? Or can, because God is all powerful, can he just give God consciousness no matter in what mode of consciousness we are? Because there's the example from Ramachandra and the monkeys and things like that.
I think those, can we go straight from passion or ignorance to transcendence without passing through goodness?
Yeah, I would say like that.
I would say no. Although maybe you pass through goodness very quickly. Because it's to say that you're both in the mode of passion or in the mode of ignorance and God conscious is to say there's light and darkness at the same place at the same time. It just, it's not there. All I can say, if it looks like you go straight from one to the other, is your advancement is very, very quick. And so the monkeys, they're transcendental. Although the same example of the Shudra carpenter, they still act a little bit like monkeys. So when Ramachandra was fighting the soldiers of Ravana, Ravana's soldiers had the latest military technology, and the monkeys had tree trunks and stones and so on. But they won. So they could only fight like monkeys, it's true. But they were in the mode of goodness, beyond the mode of goodness, actually. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Prabhupada ki jai.